TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Warning. The Outsider's Edge contains strong opinions, unconventional views, and contrarian stances. Listen, if you dare.
Hey, yo!
Respect to the Bullet Club today, y'all. Give our deference to Mr. Tranquilo himself, Naito Two Belts. My boy Tetsuya Naito.
Tetsuya Two Belts.
Tetsuya Two Belts. Well, I'm Cashy Two Belts, aka Cashy Ni Nare. Get it? Cashy Ni Nare.
I get it. But I mean, Tetsuya Two Belts is alliterative and is therefore superior.
See, this is what you get when you have people with degrees on your podcast. Nonetheless, it's your boy Rance, aka Ray Cash. That's Kyle Morris. This is The Outsider's Edge. Big week. Big week. Y'all know how I feel about my boy Naito. Y'all know how I feel about my boy Gato. Before we go any further, Gato, I appreciate you, homie. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But before we do anything, we got a good brother in the house.
I was waiting to see how long it was going to take you to introduce.
Oh, I got you. I got this hosting thing down, bro. Call me the Black Ryan Seacrest. Nah, I don't want that one.
Really a compliment?
I don't want that one.
Is that Nick Cannon? Because, I'm pretty sure Eminem is currently making him his bitch again.
I got you. Call me 2019 Terrence J. How about that?
All right.
Yeah, the white folks listening, who the fuck is Terrence J? Never mind. Anyway, my brother from another mother, my legit brother, my family member, Mr. Rob Daniels, a.k.a. Rab Ropes, is here with us tonight. What's happening, man?
Thanks for having me on, guys. I'm still not sure why the hell I'm here for this episode, but we'll figure it out.
Well, you're here because we like you, and we're unapologetic in our reason. So, that's all you need to know.
The tagline of the show is we don't give a fuck, so... But let me give the listening audience the joke. Tonight, we're going to be talking primarily New Japan, Wrestle Kingdom, and this weekend, you have NXT UK TakeOver Blackpool 2. Rob watches neither. So this is the fun of the show tonight, y'all. But what I always love about having Rob on here is Rob is he cares about this shit just as much as we do, but he is a true casual in the sense of he only watches one product, and he watches it from the eyes of someone who doesn't care about the backstage dealings. And that's so rare in this day and age, which is why I always love to get his perspective.
Well, and I think it's also a really great conversation to have. It's always fun to talk about what's going on outside of WWE with someone who doesn't really look outside very often.
Yeah.
Because, maybe it's just the teacher in me, but I love exposing people to new worlds.
Agreed. And yeah, go ahead, man.
Hey, that I was going to say that you guys essentially are my exposure. I hear you guys talk about it. Of course, Ricky and Clive. I hear you guys talk about it.
Yeah, I heard that too. It's all good. We're not live, but we are. I got a question for you to start off, Rob, because we're really going to get into Wrestle Kingdom here in a minute.
Yeah.
But I hate saying casual, but from the non-informed standpoint, what did you think or do you think of the idea or prospect of a dual WrestleMania, Wrestle Kingdom, Bound for Glory, a dual super card show, two nights of it?
Instead of casual, because you don't like the term, let's call him an unplugged fan. He's not.
Oh, that's dope.
I like that.
That's when Rob starts his new podcast, Rambler with Rab Ropes. He ain't started it, but I'm gonna make him start it. That's the shirt. Hashtag unplugged. Go ahead. What do you think? Hey, what do you think of the prospect of that idea?
So this is actually a conversation that you and I have had off air in regards to WrestleMania and how it's ever expanding. The card continues to grow. Fuck it, I'm all for it. I say give me 24 hours, Le Mans, WrestleMania. If they want to stretch it across an entire weekend, I'm down. It's only happening once a year. It's your biggest show. Everything is leading up to it. Go all out. I mean, if you want to stretch it across two nights, if you tell the stories that you're supposed to tell, you have the fans invested, they'll tune in for it.
So here's the one thing that I can both say I liked and didn't like, but the difference between how Gato booked Wrestle Kingdom's nights and how I think many of us fans would expect, say, a WrestleMania two-night show to be booked. Gato didn't book it as two separate shows. Gato booked it as the continuation of the first show on the second night. So, like, it wasn't two separate groups of people. Like, well, like Raw and SmackDown.
And it was
like the same people wrestled on both nights.
I was going to say, it was also much more traditionally New Japan, or I guess maybe just more indie in the sense of the same people were wrestling on each show. New Japan is a touring company that airs their shows.
Yeah.
And so, like, Wrestle Kingdom as an event meant, like, okay, so the people that were in the eight-man tags on night one were either participants in the never-open six-man gauntlet, or they were parts of the individual tag and singles matches from the main.
And particularly, Chaos fought Bullet Club, and then the next night, Goto fought Kenta, and both of them anchored the two matches.
And then like, to tie the show together, they had the dual gold dash.
Well, we gonna get into that. Oh, we gonna get into that.
But I'm just saying, to tie the shows together, they had the dual gold in the sense that the semi-main events of night one were to determine the matches for night two, particularly which one was going to be the ultimate champion.
Yeah.
And I think the way that WWE would probably do it differently is they would book two totally separate cards, a la a TakeOver and a WrestleMania.
But I think I would prefer that, Kyle.
I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with either one. I think they both have merit.
Yeah.
It's just that, you know, each fits its own brand. You know, we've talked a lot about how wrestling is a niche sport, and within the niche, there's further niche. Wrestle Kingdom is in every way, shape, form, like the Keeping It Strong Style guys said when we had them on last week. Shout out to them. It is in every way, shape, and form the end of the New Japan calendar year, and it is booked in such a way that is very much New Japan, and nothing says New Japan more than we're gonna have a three night weekend. The first two nights are the big event, and then the final night is the blow off that tells you what's gonna happen going forward.
Start of the new year.
Like,
that was gonna be my question is how essentially their roster compares to WWE roster, because just thinking hypothetically, if WWE were to expand WrestleMania to two nights, and they booked it in the same manner where the matches from the first night bled over into the second night, I think everyone would be crying foul that you could have worked so many more people on the card. Mm-hmm. Why didn't you take this opportunity when you had it to include people and get them that check? Does the New Japan roster, do they have that great depth that WWE has?
They're much smaller. So New Japan as an organization, first of all, New Japan, as you probably noticed, is big on factions. Almost everyone is definitively part of a recurring, existing, ongoing faction. The big four right now are Chaos, Bullet Club, Suzuki-Gun, and Los Ingobernables de Japón, LIJ.
And hold on, there's a fifth one that nobody talks about.
Taguchi Japan.
And that's like basically everybody who's not in another faction
By default, Taguchi Japan. So that's Juice Robinson and David Finley.
Tanahashi.
Yeah. When Kushida was still in the company, he was Taguchi Japan.
Yeah.
So it's very factional, but each faction essentially is the same handful of things. You have the default junior heavyweight or junior heavyweight tag team. You have the default heavyweight tag team. And then you have two or three heavyweight wrestlers, one of which is the leader of the faction. So for Suzuki-gun, that's obviously Suzuki.
Yeah.
For LIJ, that's Tetsuya Naito. For Chaos, it's Kazuchika Okada. For Bullet Club, it's Jay White, officially anyway. And then for Taguchi Japan, it's Taguchi.
Supposedly. We know that Tanahashi ran it.
Yes.
So are the average, would you say it's fair that the average New Japan fan is, they root for a faction only, much like any person living in the South will root for SEC football over anybody else?
No, I would say it's more like, a club sport mentality of like, there are maybe favorite factions, but there's just an overall appreciation for the organization. Here's what I think the difference would be in the two in terms of how the rosters work. Roster placement in New Japan is every bit as rigidly enforced as it is in, you know, other companies.
Probably more so.
But they eliminate that with the illusion of parity through the multi-man matches and the faction aspect. So, like, even though there's a very clear hierarchy between Taichi and Naito, Taichi and Naito are still going to scrap in a multi-man, and they're still going to maybe go at it in a New Japan Cup match before
they feuded.
Yeah, they feuded last year.
Yeah.
So like, they evenly distribute people, but it's within a much smaller roster. And then they use, instead of jobbers, they use what are called their young lions, which are basically the wrestlers in training. If you see a young lion match and it's got any kind of established star in it, that's who's about to pin the young lion.
And to add context to what he's saying, another fun fact about their faction system is factions often fight each other.
Yeah.
Like, Chaos is, like, notoriously, they're not together 9 times out of 10. They're only together for like big moments. And like, you see a lot of these tournaments they have, whether it's the New Japan Cup, G1, the Super Juniors, the World Tag League, or the Junior Tag League. Like, factions often fight each other in those matches.
And some factions have more history than others. So like, Suzuki-gun and LIJ are fight on site.
Yeah. And Chaos, for example, Okada is over Chaos. Well, you know who created Chaos? Shinsuke Nakamura. And he handed it off to Okada when he walked away. So, like, there's so much history in these factions. Suzuki-gun, Josh will kill me for not remembering this, my bad. But Suzuki took Suzuki-gun from the guy before him, and it got renamed Suzuki-gun. And I believe, this is just Rand speaking, when Suzuki ends up leaving, Sabre's going to take it from Suzuki, and it's going to be Sabre-gun. But that, like, so it's like there's certain history with it. And all the factions kind of have their own kind of, almost like fraternities in America. They kind of have their own feel. Suzuki-gun are like thugs. Like, they never start a match.
They beat up the young lion. They beat up the young lions who are standing outside the ring.
For no reason.
For funsies.
The matches have no structure. Like, yeah.
So what you're saying is when they decide to remake the Warriors, they're just going to bring in all the factions from New Japan.
Why not?
Yeah.
Makes sense to me.
I'm down with all of that.
So to get a little deeper into it, you mentioned the Double Gold Dash. So I played the music at the beginning. In Gedo we trust. I prayed to the Shrine of Gedo, and he gave me Tetsuya Naito winning both. He shouted out Okada and said, we can do this shit in the Dome again. And he gave me 7 minutes of enjoyment until he had to bring that dastardly Kenta to destroy it.
Now, no, man, but that was so great. And, like, I think I loved it so much more because Josh was on last week and, like, gave us more of the insight into how the Japanese crowd perceives Kenta.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the whole, you know, get this Noah trash out of our out of our ring.
He's a legit scoundrel.
Well, and like the, you know, all the stuff about the subtext that I did legitimately miss in terms of like the arrogance because I don't speak Japanese. So like, I appreciated that angle so much more after Youngboy gave us the like in-depth on it, because like it just had so much more power for me with all of that extra backstory. And that's one thing that I think Gato does so well is payoffs and like character development.
Yeah, that's cool. Fuck that. He couldn't give me one night though. Like one night though. Like New Year's Dash was the next night. You could have done the same angle the next night. You couldn't give me one night though. You couldn't give me like 7 minutes though. And then here's the most. Here's the worst part. Here's the worst part. Bushi came to save him. Sonata.
Yo, but
Evil.
Yo,
Shingo.
But Kenta.
Rio was.
But Kenta with the fucking fire ass tweet. Only Tetsuya came to save Tetsuya.
So, is it true?
Is that, well, that's Bushi's real name, is Tetsuya.
Oh, that's dope. Okay. So, I didn't know like, that. That's
it
dope.
Was so fucking fire.
So, the little history on Bullet Club, Rob. Bullet Club historically has never had a leader. They had a spokesman. So Finn started Bullet Club and he was a spokesman. And then Carl kind of doubled as the second spokesman, right? Passed on to AJ when Finn left. AJ was not the leader. AJ was a spokesman. Kenny kicked AJ out, and the Elite kind of took over the Bullet Club, but Kenny was never the leader. He was the leader of the Elite, not of the Bullet Club. Jay White has impressed the Tongans so much, all difference, that they have elected him as the official first leader, right? Jay White was in the Double Gold Dash. Jay White walked into night one as the IWGP Intercontinental Champion. Jay
he
White
spent a good portion of last year as the IWGP Heavyweight.
He started the year, yes, and sold out him and Okada, sold out that G1 special. He walked in there as the IWGP Heavyweight Champion. But Jay lost to Naito night one, beat Bushi in night two. But anyway, I say all that to say this. Kenta lost the Never Openweight title to Goto clean. Clean, right? So there's a lot of wondering, fans wondering, or people in the know wondering. And, I mean, we saw some of it in New Year's Dash. But Kenta was the one to take out Naito. How does Jay White feel about that? And on New Year's Dash, Jay kind of backed up Kenta and said, I'm going to take out Sonata because Sonata's too big for his britches. So, okay, cool. I'm with the angle. The angle's fire, dog, but I just needed more than 7 minutes, dog. I've been waiting 7 years. 7 years for 7 minutes? The way Gato book, I won't get that again until I'm like 45.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. We didn't get our curtain call that we wanted, and I'm understanding that. But like for the next however long, we get to watch Tetsuya in his fire ass suit carry two belts to the ring, and like that will sustain me.
They're gonna treat him like Jericho. He's not gonna hold the belt very long. Those belts very long.
Don't bring that shit up right now. I'm trying to be sustained and
You had to bring up how wonderful the angle was with Kenta. Speaking of that, before we started the show, we were kind of riffing about this. The one thing I wanted to say was, we were talking about how Suzuki came out to kind of surprise Moxley after he beat Juice clean, which was another shock, on night two, to retain the IWGP United States Championship. And Rob particularly enjoyed the fact that Suzuki couldn't wait to get out his fucking pants. That was hilarious.
It was like he was standing at the window watching his old lady as she left for the store. He was on his way to the computer to beat his meat. He couldn't wait any longer.
Is she in the car? Did she back out yet?
She's gone.
I bring that up to say that Kyle said that those are actual traditional Wrestle Kingdom moments. Nah, bruh. Those two moments, the Kenta moment and the Suzuki moment,
were straight out of
Vince's playbook. Because Wrestle Kingdom doesn't have the
traditional moment. It's a good like verse of a Wrestle Kingdom moment. They don't have moments traditionally. You're right. They normally would have had the happy go home curtain call, and like that was awesome. Don't get me wrong. But Kenta jumping his ass is better because it's better TV, because it made me infinitely more likely to keep my subscription active longer than I would have otherwise.
Right. So for me, outside looking in, a lot of the knowledge that I have comes from the show, comes from Ricky and Clive. Two things that I've always heard that really interest me about the way that second night turned out is that the blindside attacks or the swerve endings always happen at New Year's Dash. It never happens at Wrestle Kingdom.
Never.
And then the second thing I've always heard is that Gato books a year, 2 years in advance. And how long has Kenta been there? How long has this been the plan? How long has this been in the works?
Well, that's a good question. So, for the Gato does book years in advance. Many people believe that this Naito win was booked 2 years ago when he lost to Okada in the Dome after beating the G1. Kenta debuted this year over there after he asked for his release. I do believe, I don't know this, you'd have to ask Josh or Jeremy, they're more into the shit than me. But Kenta, the plan was always for Kenta to be in Bullet Club. I don't think that the plan was for Kenta to be the first guy after Naito until Gato saw how much the crowd truly hated Kenta. And Naito has been, I think until this year, maybe last year, like years running, voted most popular in Japan. Mm-hmm. Like, they treat it like sport over there. So, like, how fans would vote for most valuable player or whatever. Naito wins it running almost every year. They love the shit out of Naito. You know what I mean? So, I hate to quote this dude, but CM Punk said it best. Your last show should be the most loved versus the most hated, right? Nobody's more loved in that company right now than Naito. And right now, nobody's more hated than Kenta.
Makes sense.
And I think, just to offer a possible idea, and I could be totally off base here, and, it wouldn't be the first time, and it won't be the last time, but, fuck it, I'm going to say it anyway. I think part of the reason we saw more swerves and weird things on night two than we normally would have at Wrestle Kingdom is because Wrestle Kingdom was two nights this year.
Mm-hmm.
And normally the weekend is two nights. So, like, we have Wrestle Kingdom, and then the next night we have New Year's Dash, and that's where we see the craziness and the unexpected stuff and the surprises and blah, 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 blah. Well, this year, Wrestle Kingdom was two nights, and then we had New Year's Dash. And to top all of that off, we had the looming over it all, the ultimately feel-good story, but still big event of Liger's retirement. And it being his final weekend, and, New Year's Dash, the first third of that show was the retirement ceremony for Liger. I think just maybe a reason we saw more unconventional shit this year is because, like, for the first time ever, it was a two-night show, and they were trying something different, and, like, really, it's the same booking philosophy. Night one, what you expected to happen happens, and then night two, balls to the wall, insanity, who the fuck knows?
I also want to add, and this is just throwing shit against the wall, too, but I think Gato's easily the best booker in the company, in the world. I think Uncle Paul is very close, but Gato's been consistent for years. But he also has a very good idea of knowing timing and where he is. And he knows that New Japan right now is opening up to the world. Remember, New Japan of America starts touring this year. Like, they're opening up to the world more than ever. Ring of Honor, that shit, they don't fuck with it no more, so they're on their own.
Young Lions, by the way, those North American Young Lions are cute. I am a huge fan. Yes.
Thank you for that insight.
No, the thank you is to Shibata for training them and allowing them to be on my television in them skimpy little outfits looking all cute.
Oh, God. Well...
Take that off this show either, because I am totally comfortable with who I am as a person, and I don't give a fuck.
This is the type of content you guys listen for on the Edge. I think Gato is booking to a different crowd than usual, a bigger crowd than usual. And so I think he's trying to not acquiesce, but do things slightly differently. But you hit it right on the head. typically he booked it the way he would have booked it any year. It's just that second night happened to be on the big night. Before we kind of move away from New Japan, did you have a favorite match of either night?
I don't like Will Ospreay, but my favorite match was him and Takahashi for the Hiromu moment. It was a great match, and Hiromu winning the belt back, got me right in the feels. So
Hiromu Takahashi broke his neck last year
at the height of his popularity. He's an LIJ guy, so
his popularity was starting to rival Naito's. So, shout out to Daryl Takahashi. That's his little fake pet cat. Yeah.
Oh.
I'll send you a picture of him later. But yeah, shout out to Daryl. And Daryl Jr.
I was going to say, there's all kinds of canon surrounding Daryl. He's one of the best parts of Hiromu.
By the way, when we found out that Daryl had a baby, we lost our minds.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was huge. There's a Daryl Jr.
When he brings Daryl and he does Daryl with the LIJ fist bump in the end, it is the cutest fucking thing because he's so into it.
He is. And Naito always just acquiesces. He's just aight. Gives Daryl a little fist bump. I think Ospreay Takahashi was awesome.
My sleeper match that I also loved, it was definitely one of a kind for the weekend, was Sonata and Sabre. I really enjoyed their, world of sporty, catch-as-catch-can, hold fest. That was really fun.
My feet went out when that came on, so I didn't get a chance to watch it yet, but I'll go back and watch it.
I wouldn't say it was either man's best match, but
it's what you would expect. Yeah,
It was very world of sport, catches, catch can, hold for hold, pin swaps, reversals. And it's the type of thing that on a card like Wrestle Kingdom was great as its standalone self.
Because it's different.
It's different and it's fun. And I'm I'm in for one of those. I don't need.
Seven of them.
Yeah, I don't need a card of that.
So of course I enjoyed Naito White because Jay White's the best heel in the business. Ibushi Okada was clearly the best match of the night. Might be the match of the year. Until this weekend, we're gonna talk about that. But I really had a lot of love for Kenta Goto because Kenta Goto going into this match, the backstory behind that is, I'm sure you've heard us mention the name Shibata, right?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Katsuri Shibata. So you know about him and the hematoma and everything, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, Kenta and Shibata, actually, the hesitation dropkick that Shibata does took it from Kenta, I believe, or I might have that wrong. But their paths crossed. When he came back, it was Shibata who brought Kenta in to New Japan and made him a part of Team Takeover. He started seconding him into the ring. And it was all the rules basically to take out Shibata, join the Bullet Club. Well, he physically Shibata's finishing move is either the sleeper or the penalty kick, the PK. He PK'd Shibata. When it happened, we were like, oh my God, Shibata got physical. What the fuck?
Yes.
And Goto and Shibata are best friends going back to high school. Real life. And they tag together. Miyu tag or Mayu tag, however you say that. Josh, again, I apologize. And they've tagged forever. So Goto was kind of the surrogate for Shibata. Because
you want to talk about most effective heel turn ever? You put your hands on Shibata in a Japanese
And then he audience. Did. Then he did the Shibata pose over his lifeless body.
Yeah, is that what he did over Naito at the end as well?
Yes, that's Shibata's pose. So he's never gonna let that go. So that was blood, we're going to kill you. When they had the 8-man tag the night before, when Bullet Club walked in the ring, chaos was already in the ring. Goto and Kenta, Kenta walked, as soon as he got in the ring, they stood there and stared at each other for 2 minutes. The ref had to pull them, they weren't moving. Just not like a WWE stare down where it's and they're looking at, no. It was I'm going to murder you when they let me. And the match the next night was like that. And so I really enjoyed that. Yeah, New Japan. Any questions, Rob? Anything you want to know?
No, I shared both of your joys. That was my biggest interest over the weekend. I didn't have a favorite match because I didn't watch any, but sure. That was what I was most concerned about, was how it was going to end up with Naito.
You know, after it's over, like anything, you appreciate something when it's done. You don't appreciate it when it's going on. Like traffic. Once they finally finish the construction, you understand why they did it. But you know. Yeah. But in the moment, you don't feel it or appreciate it. So I appreciate that we're finally here with Naito, and he's the first to do something that'll probably never be done again. But they could have done this shit 2 years ago. Like, it wasn't better because of it. Like, he could have beat Okada 2 years ago, and that'd have been good. I really think they missed. It's very rarely they miss a moment. But they, and I understand why. I get it. It makes sense. It lays out. All the marks are checked, but that shit could happen 2 years ago. So
how hard do you think Naito is praying that when he has to drop one of the belts, it's the IC? Because that's his belt, right?
I could be misreading here, but I just feel like the dual title thing is a way to slowly phase out the IC.
And that's hilarious to me because Shinsuke killed himself to make that belt worth a damn.
And then this—I could be wrong. I could be totally misreading.
No, I feel the same way.
Totally wrong, but I just feel like the way that this whole thing went down, you know,
and
it was
the same
fitting
way.
With, especially with Naito winning, it would be fitting for the IC to like kind of.
Because he never gave a damn.
Because he never liked that title. He used to hate it so much that he used to physically assault the belt.
Yeah. Like that's why. That's how I fell in love with him.
He would throw it at the stairs and stomp on it, and like.
That's what made me fall in love with Naito. That's when I realized, oh, this dude is awesome.
That's why him versus Tanahashi for the IC belt was a big deal that year, because when Tana won it back, he was just like, "I'm gonna get the new belt because like you've just destroyed this one."
I think it's ironic that Shinsuke again killed himself to build that belt up and main event a Wrestle Kingdom. And then this Rinky Dink US belt is a beautiful belt. I'm not saying Rinky Dink in that sense. But, like, Juice has held it. And, like, Jay White held it for, like, a cup of coffee. And, like, you know, Hangman Page and Cody fought for the belt. No diss to those guys. They're awesome. But, like, it's, you know, Moxley's giving it some real steam now. But, like Lance Archer's never held a singles belt in New Japan. He held the belt. And Archer's awesome, too. But, like, you know... But because of the expansion into America, there's really not a need for IC belt. Especially with them really giving credence to the Rev Pro British Heavyweight belt. Mm-hmm. So they got Britain, they got America, they don't really need an IC belt no more. So I'm kind of with you. I'm kind of with you, Kyle.
If that's the case, it's fitting that Naito would be maybe the one to combine them.
Yeah, well, that's the other part of that is like, it'd be fitting that just winning the IC title wouldn't be enough for him. It's fitting that he would want the dual gold belt, and it's fitting absolutely with his character if he were to say something like, you know, the IC title was very prestigious or whatever, but its time has passed or some crazy shit, and he retires it.
So Wrestle Kingdom was awesome, y'all. I recommend it 100%. Another underrated thing about Wrestle Kingdom is, you know, a lot of big shows, there's a lot of filler, backstage segments and video packages. It's match. As soon as the dude's walking out from the match, like the next song is playing for the next match to come out. It's just hard hitting, and that's refreshing in a sense. But speaking of hard hitting, I know you two lads don't watch this program, but NXT UK might be the best in-ring product week to week we have.
You're right. It might be. I have no idea, because you know what I'm doing on Friday at 3 o'clock? Working.
Shame on you. You have the network. And I feel you, because I don't watch the weekly show either, but I keep up with that shit. Nonetheless, they have a takeover this weekend, which, and y'all going to think I'm crazy, but nothing's going to rival Wrestle Kingdom in totality from in-ring perspective. But these five matches on this card on the TakeOver Blackpool 2 card are the tag match, which our good brother Clive, a.k.a. Brian, calls the Organized Chaos match. That might eclipse Ibushi Okada as a match of the year. Easily might eclipse it. So I'm running down the card. I know you guys
Blackpool
know.
Blackpool 2?
Blackpool 2, yes.
It was the original Blackpool, the debut takeover?
The debut takeover, yes, sir.
That was the last time I've watched the product.
All right, so it was a year ago. Good to know. Blackpool is, I guess, it's going to be basically their Brooklyn.
Okay.
And the first ever, the original United Kingdom Championship Tournament was in Blackpool. So, that's, the hub, the start for them. You have Eddie Dennis, or a.k.a., as Rob called him, the guy with the jorts. Versus the swaggy Trent Seven. Trent Seven got so much swag for old dude. He got swag. You have...
Damn, you calling him old. He's only, 35, 36?
He's older than us, damn it. And...
That much, though, is what I'm saying.
He's old enough for people to think that he's Tyler Bates' dad. Let's put it like that.
Says the dad of the oldest child of the three people on this show. You've been a dad longer than anyone.
That's not longer than Trent. Because Tyler's 22. You're right. I have no comeback. Speaking of Tyler Bate versus Jordan Devlin in a match that could main event on this earth tomorrow. That's gonna be fire. You have the women who are getting so much of the disrespect. This match is fire, but because the other matches are so good, they haven't got a lot of shine. But you have Piper Niven, aka Viper. You know Piper. You know her, right?
I know
Piper. Versus Toni Storm, who killed the internet today with what she wore yesterday. Shout out to Toni. Versus the champ, the Kaylee Ray, the Scottish Daredevil. You have, the Organized Chaos Fatal 4-Way ladder match. And the way I'm going to describe it to you guys on air, I described it to you guys in a text message. You have the champs Gallus, who are the athletic bruisers. You have South Wales Subculture, which are the high flyers. You have Imperium, which is your classic big guy, little guy combo. But the big guy is Cesaro level strength. And you have the new Midnight Express and the best tag team in the world, the Grizzled Young Vets and Liverpool's number one. Shout out to Zach Gibson. They are the best tag team in the world right now to the Usos start back. Grizzled Young Vets are amazing. Grizzled Young Vets easily had the best year of any tag team in the world in 2019. I dare anybody to say different.
That is high praise.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot.
And then, of course, you got the big Austrian Walter versus Jesus Christ himself, reincarnated as a Scott, Joe Coffey.
So much like my interest level was highest in the Naito match because of my ties to you guys and wanting you to be happy, the same for that main event. My interest level is highest in seeing Joe Coffey, hopefully dethrone Walter because of our good brothers Ricky and Clive.
It's time, dog. It's time. Walter's amazing, and Walter's always going to dominate NXT UK. If for no other reason, he's never leaving Europe. So that's one reason. But he's amazing. Walter is one of the few. Walter has taker levels of chemistry with small guys. So, to be that big and to bump well for small dudes.
We can't blame Walter for not wanting to leave Europe right now because, we're kind of a shit show.
Yeah.
Fact.
Who would have thought this time last millennia that we'd be saying, yeah, Germany is the country that got this shit together? I'm just saying. Joe Coffey took Pete Dunne to the limit when Pete Dunne broke the record for the longest title reign in recent memory. Joe Coffey beat Dave Mastiff. If you know who Dave Mastiff is, that's not an easy feat. Joe Coffey has easily been probably the next guy up for a minute. Walter beat Pete Dunne twice. I think he beat Joe Coffey once before, like in a regular match on NXT UK. He beat Tyler Bate in what could have been the match of the year last year. So it's time. And if it's not going to be Joe Coffey, this might be another Shayna Baszler situation, like of who would it be?
Don't want to end up in that situation, because it's never good when you run out of challengers. And it's also never good when you get to a point where it's like, okay, the moment has now, like, just like the moment can pass for you to win a belt, the moment can pass for you to drop a belt. And, like, that's a jump the shark risk.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and speaking of Shayna, if you read our good brother Clive's column on Lords of Pain this week, his debut column on the main page, the brand extension, he explains expertly why, even though we all felt it was way overdue for Shayna to lose it, it was a perfect kind of changing of the tides moment, the way it happened. I think Joe Coffey does it. I think it's his time.
That's some pretty good storytelling, because the last one I watched was NXT TakeOver Blackpool. Coffey got his ass kicked by Walter, who was debuting. And
yeah, it was Coffey versus Dunn, and then Walter came and destroyed both of them. Yeah.
Yeah. That's some pretty good storytelling to keep that going for this long. I mean, I know they haven't been feuding the entire time, but that's impressive.
I bet everything I own, that shit wasn't planned. It just happened that way. But yeah, let's go with it, though, because it sounds good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Happy accidents.
I want to pick your brain on this, Rob. You know, there's been a lot of controversy in recent months, years, about the thought of WWE kind of homogenizing the UK circuit. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a reboot of World of Sport that got dropped after, like, episode 2. Many smaller feds have gone out of business, with Triple H an interview recently saying that's some shit that's going to happen, basically. And we were talking about there's not very many people to, who will be the next challenger. Well, one would argue a big part of that is because all of the guys in that scene who would be at that level are either unsignable, like David Starr can never sign with WWE. That's just never going to happen. Or they're working for another fed, or there's nobody else ready. Like, Will Ospreay would be perfect in that role. He's never leaving. Man. Robbie Eagles would be perfect. He's never leaving.
Man, I know you're right, but, like, why you got to ruin my hopes on David Starr? I know you're right, but why you got to ruin my hope?
My bad, dog. Hey, well, look, ICW can be considered, like, in you light, right? And David Starr runs that, so there you go. But, I mean, so what do you think? Do you think that one company can homogenize an entire region? Two, if they are doing it, do you think it's a bad thing?
So I'll start by saying, fuck the English.
Oh, okay. That's our show, guys. Thanks for listening.
I don't think it's a bad thing. And maybe I'm just, because I've been raised drinking Vince's Kool-Aid, I trust the product and the vision. I know it's a known commodity. I know what I'm going to get, even though I don't watch this particular product. We've proven here, Vince and the WWE has been on top for so long. There's always opportunities outside of that. It may not be at the same level. It currently could be, with some of the other companies, but there's always going to be somebody that's coming along that's going to raise up. There's opportunities for other talent there. It might not be as wide open as it was before NXT UK came into existence, but I guarantee these guys are getting paid better than they were before that. And that counts for something.
That's very true. And I've always believed that I'm not one of those people that believes that you can kill an independent scene by signing independent wrestlers. I just think that means that the ones that are already there get valued better. and there's more money put back in because they know, oh, well, Pete Dunne was making a completely just a spitball of numbers. Pete Dunne was making $1,000 a match on the indies. Now he signed a contract for $100,000 a year. Downside, oh, well, we got to pay this dude better money because we don't want him to leave. Or we value him better because Dunne left. Or something like that to that order. And also, most of these guys signed NXT UK still have the ability to wrestle indies.
Absolutely. So, I think one of the biggest benefits that to me that I see is that if nothing else, it gives these guys a path. There is a path to make it from you were just on the indies in England and maybe you know a couple thousand people knew who you were. But now there's a path. If you do well in NXT UK, you can move up to NXT. You do well in NXT, you can move up to the main roster, or you can stay in NXT because it kind of is the main roster now. But yeah, there's a path that wasn't necessarily there before. You may have had to make your own way before, but it's kind of laid out for you now if you choose to go that direction.
Okay. I mean, on the one hand, I am a big believer in competition. On the other hand, I am deeply fearful of monopoly. And so, like, while I respect WWE's ability to just run an effective business model and supplement it with the Titan Money juggernaut, I'm also, like, just always concerned whenever you have an issue of competitive fairness and potential, like, at the end of the day, you know, I still think you need a feeder system outside of the performance center because innovation is stifled when everything's coming from the same house.
That's real. That's real.
Yeah.
So I have a follow-up question for that. That's a great answer. My follow-up is that WWE's job to regulate that? Or should the marketplace rise itself up and match the output that WWE is doing?
My honest answer is a little bit of both. Like, that is legitimately my answer. Because I think that, yes, the other companies have this obligation to increase their quality in a lot of ways if they want to be able to stay on that competitive plane. But I think that WWE does have an ethical responsibility to their field to not overtake it entirely. Because, you know, I think about it like, you know, it's controversial subject though it may be, even though it shouldn't be, you know, think about something like climate change and people talk about how, like, one individual can't themselves overcome the ecological scale of climate change and corporations have to step in and the government have to step in. And that's very true, but that doesn't mean that we don't also have personal responsibility to, you know, change our habits as consumers and be more mindful and use less carbon or eat less meat or compost or recycle more or whatever the case may be to reduce our environmental impact. Like, just because I can't overcome climate change on my own doesn't mean I don't still have a responsibility to do my part. And so, to bring it back to our actual topic, just because I do agree that, you know, these other companies need to do things like, you know, have maybe a more competitive pay scale and, you know, look out for their workers and maybe improve workplace quality in a number of areas that I'm not knowledgeable about because I'm not British and I'm not plugged into that scene. But I think WWE still also has the ethical responsibility from their end to recognize, like, not necessarily just in the UK, but overall, you know, we can't put every company out of business. Sometimes we need to have working relationships with companies. Sometimes we need to just, you know, sometimes we need to let companies exist so that they can take the Sammy Callahan so that we don't have to.
We're going to talk about Sammy Callahan in
a
minute.
I agree with you, Rob. He's cringe, but I mean, like, a star like him, or like someone I do like that I know is not everybody's cup of tea, a Joey Ryan, like, there's a place for them within an industry like wrestling, and they're going to find that place for themselves. And if WWE was the only act in town, then a marketable something like that, you know, you either lose out on it entirely because it never gets created because it has no opportunity to exist, or you get stuck with people like Sammy when he was in NXT and you get the shit version of it.
Solomon Crow.
I agree to an extent, but when we talk about innovation being stifled and the homogenization, you know, being pushed into the WWE mold, I don't think that you're seeing that with NXT UK. When I do view it, it's wildly different than NXT Florida, and it's wildly different than anything that you see on Raw or SmackDown. So I do think that they're able to maintain some of their roots, that British subculture of wrestling, and innovate. You see Pete Dunne, when he comes across the pond, he still wrestles that style. So I don't think they're necessarily stifling the innovation by having that territory there.
But I think the argument against that is all the stars are gone. It's like Pete Dunne was the star of UK. Like there were essentially three or four main stars of the UK: Will Ospreay, Marty Scurll, Pete Dunne, and who's the other one? Time.
Zack Sabre Time.
Yeah. Well. Okay. Got you. Yeah. My bad.
I had no idea what that was.
Sorry, y'all. It was a Z.
Yeah.
Z Time.
You know what I thought you were doing?
Something.
I thought you were doing Zima Ion. Zima Ion.
Oh. No.
Sorry. No. But yeah, those were like the guys. And then, you know, lesser guys were like David Starr, Devlin, Bate, Walter came up and became a major star. But like everybody I just named, except for David Starr, who will never sign with a company because that's just his life,
yeah,
are signed to a major company. Right? And the majority of them signed to WWE. So I think that's the argument against what you're saying, because from an aesthetic standpoint, you're absolutely right. But from a logistical standpoint, Defiant, which was used to be What Culture's company, died because everybody got signed. That's not why they died. Let's keep it a buck. World Culture died because everybody left World Culture and they just were making the same money. They fired all the major guys. That's the real reason. Nonetheless, everybody left. So I don't want to stay on this subject too long, but I want to one more follow up with you, Kyle. I don't know if I agree what you're saying, but I see your reasoning. My question is, what would you have WWE do to help with what you're pitching or hoping for?
I don't know that I would necessarily have them do something specific other than, you know, continue to allow the performers in these like foreign expansions to work dates outside of that. And I mean, I would like,
you know, the danger of that.
Oh yeah, the danger is a motherfucker gets hurt, and that's that ass. Like
John Moxley.
You know, I totally see the danger of it. I totally do. But like, I mean, to be honest, you know, instead of setting up territories, what I would have liked to have seen them do in a perfect world, but it's not going to happen because they've already set about this system, as I would have liked to see more of a New Japan-esque send people out on excursion and, like, partner with federations and, like, you know, give them that rub. You know, we go to Saudi Arabia every year, you know, partner with a local federation there and give them that
rub.
I know they're not there because it's blood money, but you know what the fuck I mean, Rance. Stop.
I know. I'm fucking.
I'm hungry, yeah. And I'm trying to make a point.
No, you have a great point, but I'd argue that's kind of what they're doing in a lesser extent. Like, they made a deal with Evolve. They have a deal with ICW. They have a deal with Progress. They're kind of doing that.
Yeah.
Well, we can talk about this all day long. I actually want to pitch to something I hate to talk about, but it's relevant tonight. You mentioned the despicable and deplorable Sami Callihan. Well, Sami Callihan is currently your Impact World Champion. Not only...
By who?
Your Impact.
By what?
Yeah, that the cockroach of... Well, actually, no. We're going to give them more credit than we're going to give Ring of Honor today.
I was going to say, because, Ring of Honor is the cockroach.
Yeah. So, they're more... TNA is a dung beetle. Fair? Okay.
Not TNA is more like a scarab. They can live for years on the dead corpses of other companies.
Oh, that is the best description ever.
That's faction. That's another T-shirt. but Sami Callihan is your Impact World Champion. This weekend is Impact Hard to Kill. It's in Dallas. The reason
What an appropriate name for an Impact show.
Well, if one thing Scott D'Amore is good at, it's at reading the room. So he's really good at knowing what's going on. Him and Don Callis. I got to give them credit because for me to bring them up, they have to be doing something important. This is a monumental match and a monumental weekend because Sami Callihan is defending his Impact World Championship against Tessa Blanchard. And Tessa is expected to win and be the first female world champion of a major promotion.
I hope Tessa drags that ass.
Huge. And for all the despicable things that we feel and say about Sami, Sami's always done three major things. Sami's always revolted against racist ass Jim Cornette. Sami is one of Sonny Kiss's best fucking friends. And Sami has worked tirelessly and pushed behind the scenes tirelessly to have Tessa in this spot treated as his equal. Not as somebody who he's beating up, but no, as his equal. She constantly beats his ass on the regular in brawls, in fights, in matches. He has put her over as his equal. So for all we feel about him personally, shout out to him for that. So...
I didn't know the first two. That kind of takes the edge. It takes the edge a little bit off of my dislike of him, but not completely.
Sonny loves Sami. Sonny talks about Sami all the time. Sonny loves shit on Sami.
So Sami is not a garbage human being. Sammy's just like a really shit wrestler.
And he's good at his job at being a shit wrestler.
Sammy's not a terrible human. He's just a shit wrestler.
Back to the match. I don't want this to come out as like a shitty question. This is a genuine question. Mm-hmm. Is this booking and this timing of Tessa getting the shot? This is huge, like you said. Mm-hmm. Is this a case of striking while the iron is hot, or
didn't you cash in option C? Is this an option C thing?
No, she didn't win anything. She lost it. Remember, Ace Austin won. Ace Austin won the thing. Yeah.
I guess my question is, why on a pay-per-view called Hard to Kill instead of one of their higher profile shows?
So like, that's
why not on a Slammiversary?
That's a great question.
Because my response would be, because this is risky and experimental, and you always do risky and experimental things at a lower key show in case the experiment blows up in your face. Look at case in point, since we're talking intergender wrestling, when you think intergender wrestling, when I think intergender wrestling, the person we always think of is China.
Yep.
When did China win the Intercontinental title? It wasn't at WrestleMania. It wasn't at SummerSlam. It wasn't at Survivor Series. It was at like No Mercy or Backlash or Armageddon.
Good housekeeping match.
One of the ancillary pay-per-views in a good housekeeping match.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, like, because, and why does that happen? Because even though she is over as shit, even though you know it's bankable money, this is still a really unconventional thing that we're doing. And just in case this totally blows up in our fucking faces, we're going to quietly do this at a sideshow.
That's a great point, and that's probably the real reason. Yeah. On screen, the reason given was Sami Callihan had to finish his story with Brian Cage.
Okay.
Brian Cage was the world champ going into Bound for Glory, which was like a couple months ago, and Cage beat Sami Callihan, and then Sami won it with the help of all three members of OVE. That's Jake Crist, that's Dave Crist, and here's a fun fact for you. Remember Sawyer Fulton from Sanity? He's Madman Fulton now, a member of OVE in Impact. OVE is Ohio versus Everything. Took all three of them for him to finally beat Brian Cage. And that's when Tessa stepped back up because I don't know if Cage got hurt, Cage got out of the picture. And Tessa, because she lost their fake-ass Money in the Bank match or whatever to Ace Austin, she had to go back and wrestle a match in the Diamonds division because she's the king. She's the king, queen, diamond of that division, clearly. But I think a lot of it is striking where the iron is hot, too, because organically, Tessa's their biggest face star. It's happened organically. I don't know if they pushed her out to be that way. I'm sure once they saw it was coming, they went with it. But, like, this isn't any sense of them trying to force feed something to us to make us feel something or trying to make some type of history-making moment. I just think it was a match that made sense.
Impact is historically, like, the one credit I will always give them as a company is that they historically know what the fuck they are doing with women.
100%.
They know what the fuck they're doing with women.
Unequivocally. Unequivocally. And, yo, next week, I expect to be here talking about the fact that we have our first female world champion, and it's going to cause some conversations. Is this something that could be done? Is it possible? And anywhere, not is it possible, very clear it's possible. Should it be possible in Ring of Honor? Well, no, because they don't book women at all. Their champion got fired in WWE. And,
my response to anyone who ever asks if when the subject of intergender wrestling comes up and is it okay or is it should it be possible, blah, blah, blah. And don't get me wrong, I'm here for your suspension to disbelief or whatever. Mae Young gave birth to a fucking hand.
That's facts.
I don't want to fucking hear shit about should this be done. Patterson and Briscoe had an evening gown match.
Hey, that match was fire, bro.
But I'm just saying, like, whenever this subject of, like, is intergender wrestling okay comes up, I'm just like, y'all, are we talking about the same carny entertainment that I'm talking about? Because, like, this is some carny drag shit, and, like, intergender is not even the most off-the-wall thing I've ever seen. And for anybody who, like, tries to say, oh, but it's not realistic for men and women to fight, no, fuck that. That's real life. Nobody wants to talk about it, but that's real fucking life. I know plenty of women who could beat a man's ass because I've watched them beat a man's ass.
I will say, personally, I've always been for intergender wrestling, but I struggle with I struggle still currently and have with the fight aspect, not the wrestling aspect, because we know that is a suspension of disbelief and that's moves. I'm talking about let me finish.
Okay.
Let me finish real quick. They had a segment on Impact a couple weeks ago where Sami and Tessa had a full-on brawl, but not like a brawl in the ring. Like, they were outside and then, like, went to, like, the bus stop and stuff. Like, I know if I was an extra seeing that, my first thought wouldn't be, oh, that's normal. I'm trying to call the cops. Like, I can understand, like, the apprehension of that. I'm not saying that Tessa can't fight. I'm not saying that a woman can't beat a man. I just know that there is still the air of uncomfort of a man physically striking a woman. I'm not saying that women shouldn't fight or wrestle men. I'm not saying I'm against intergender wrestling. I'm 100% for it. I want Tessa to win. I just know that that's hard to turn off in your brain of that shit shouldn't happen, even though I know why it's happening. I'm sorry.
The word I just come back to for that part is the professional at the beginning of professional wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and what I mean by that is, like, this isn't just two crazy ass motherfuckers on the street coming to blows with each other. These are people who are being paid to fight. And like, even within the suspension of disbelief, I'm just saying, like, I'm watching two professionals who are being paid to contest for a title because they are two professional fighters who are at the peak of their fucking respective company. And like, has it led to brawls? Yeah, because a lot of times when two fighters are about to go toe-to-toe for the prize and they actually care about the prize, that shit gets real personal and that fight gets real hard. Mm-hmm. And so, like, that's just how I mentally, like, look at it to try to, like, because I see where you're coming from with that. Yeah. Like, the optics of it are, like, rough, especially depending on who the people are. Like, it's a whole lot easier to watch Tessa versus Sammy than it's gonna be when Brian Cage returns and takes the title from Tessa.
Yeah, Sammy and Tessa the same size.
No, even though I think Cage would willingly bump for Tessa and is absolutely 100% totally on board to do whatever the fuck she wants in the match, at the end of the day, that optically is gonna look a lot harder because Cage is fucking huge. But I still just, I'm like, all right, these are two people who are being professionally paid to fight each other. And the key to that is that means that she had to sign a contract agreeing to fight this man and is now consented to the blows.
And that's how I'm going to give it to you, Rob, in a second. But that's how Mia Yim has always reconciled in her head, because Mia has had a very storied career in intergender wrestling as well. Mia also has dealt with domestic violence in her lifetime. She had a boyfriend in the business, no names need to be said, that physically assaulted her. And she goes in depth about explaining that very same tenet, that the difference between domestic violence and what they do in wrestling is consented upon. And you're right. I just know that if I'm watching Evil Knievel shoot himself out of a rocket, I know that that's his job. I still fear for his life. You know what I mean? And I know that might not be the best analogy. And look, I'm all for it. I'm not one of these people who are against intergender wrestling. I will fight for it forever. I'm not one of these people that doesn't think a man can't do anything and a woman can, because they often can, if not better. I just know that my whole life I've been told and beat into my head, you can't hit a woman. You can't hit a woman. You can't hit a woman. And it's one thing to see them grappling or to see, you know, Sammy hit her with a power bomb or Tessa hit her with a Hurricane Runner or something like that. But to see them fucking fist fighting just really hits the Southern black sun nature in me. And I try to turn it off because I really want to see that match do well. Go ahead, Rob.
No, I really don't have much to add. You guys nailed it. I just think that for me, it's less of a an intergender thing, as opposed to I don't like brawls and fights in my wrestling in general. I would rather see the grapples and the moves and things like that. So brawls, death matches, it doesn't matter if it's intergender or just, you know, regular. That's just not for me.
Yeah, like, have you ever seen an intergender death match?
No.
If you've ever seen an intergender death match, that'll make you say, oh yeah, they can do anything they want to do.
As a general rule, since 2015, I don't do death matches.
Well, if you don't mind me asking, what was the thing that stopped you in 2015? It seems like there's a catalyst.
It's just as you grow up and you like start to value entertainers as people. Okay. And like really look at the long-term trauma that it causes on their bodies. You know, you look at someone like Necro Butcher, like I have a lot of respect for Necro Butcher.
Have you seen him?
I have a lot of respect for him. I have a lot of love for him, but like, damn, dude. Or like you look at, you know, this isn't even death matches. Look at fucking Sandman. That wasn't even death matches. That was just a career in fucking ECW and busting his head open on beer cans every fucking night. Like, look at what that does to your body.
We're going to give him some sympathy, even though we trashed shit out of him like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, no. Fuck the Sandman. Fuck him. He can suck my dick from the back. I'm not giving him sympathy. I'm saying, like, you look at someone like that, and it's just like you start to realize, like, damn, you know, you might be entertained by a tables match, but, like, at what cost? You might be entertained by a first blood match, but at what cost?
I think for me the switch for me was kind of twofold, and one thing was I've seen enough violence. Wrestling is kind of violent, but I don't want to see realistic violence in my wrestling. That's not something I enjoy. That's probably why I don't like New Japan, that strong style.
Yes. It's very realistic. Yes.
It makes me uncomfortable. And then the second part of that is the same reason that I can't watch football anymore. It's the awareness of CTE. And with wrestling, you're kind of, fuck, this is tough to say. You're used to your heroes dying young. And then now you started to see it in football with guys like Junior Seau, things like that. And when you're starting to understand where that's coming from, I don't want to see any of that shit in my wrestling. I don't like head bumps. I don't like pile drivers. I don't anything like that at all anymore. So fuck death matches, man. No.
Well, these two people that I want to ask you about next really don't give a fuck about how you feel about that, Mr. Moxley and Mr. Omega, because I'd like to get your opinion on some AEW stuff real quick. Can we talk about it, gents?
Oh, yeah. Let's go to the root beer zone.
I wasn't going to talk about this because I don't want to seem well, everybody knows I'm an NXT guy, but I'm not an anti-AEW guy, contrary to many people's belief. What's up, Platt? But last night was a critically panned show by, like, everybody. The ratings were great, and shout out to them for that. But it was a bad show.
Which is, no, that's a shout out, but that's, like, a sad shout out to me. Because, like, part of wanting a show to succeed is wanting their ratings to grow. And if you have, like, a good rating like that, and that was their strongest rating in a long time, and that the show that you put on for your strongest rating in a long time is, like, fresh cut ass. How many of those people that were just like, oh, maybe I'll tune back in and see if they figured it out, are just like, oh, so this is still a train wreck. Back to something else.
Let me run through. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say what really surprised me is at this level, it's hard to knock it out of the park every week. It's sometimes you're going to want to mail it in. They could have mailed it in last week. They were up against an NXT recap show. They're guaranteed to have the live audience.
And they killed it.
Why this week?
Why
this week was it so shit?
Well, let me run down some of what was panned. First and foremost, they were in Mississippi and they decided to do a Memphis wrestling tribute, okay? Mind you, Lawler couldn't be there, who is Memphis wrestling, but they shout out his son, Brian Christopher. Okay. It was advertised, but yet during the regular television show, they didn't do it. They taped it for Dark. That's a little bit of a misdirection, but okay, no big deal. That's really not that, in the grand scheme of things, that's not a big deal.
Not, right? Especially not for them. That's only a small deception for them.
100%. You had three segments in the night with a heel faction trying to convince a person to join them. Okay? The main event was Moxley, was an Inner Circle trying to convince Moxley to join. The Dark Order tried to convince Daniels to join. By the way, none of the Elite have confronted the Dark Order since they beat their ass at the end of the show the other night. Another conversation. And of course, everybody's favorite faction, the Nightmare Collective. Let's talk about them for a minute. Riho and Chris Statlander. If you guys will remember, yes, sir.
Who is the Nightmare Collective?
Thanks for asking.
Yes, the Nightmare Collective is Brandi Rose, who has become a voodoo witch.
Oh, and Awesome Kong.
And Melanie Cruz. And they cut people's hair off. They're basically the female straight edge society. And Chris Jericho's best friend, not a nepotism hire at all, Dr. Luther, is now a part of this group. Anyway.
Dr. Luther?
He's You look him up. I don't have time to explain the dude.
It's not worth it. This look is not a who is Dr. Luther. I know who Dr. Luther is. Are you kidding? Yeah. Why?
The bald guy who was in all the vignettes, he debuted last night. But Riho, the women's champion versus Chris Statlander. And mind you, AEW only does one women's match a night. This was the match that was supposed to be last week, but because they didn't check her schedule, Chris had to go work at Indie Bar Wrestling, and they had to do the Fatal 4-Way with Britt, Hikaru Shida, and Nyla, who just came back from suspension. But hey, let's give her a title match anyway. Riho won that match. Riho faced, Chris Statlander, who actually earned the title shot last night. Britt Baker, Hikaru Shida are in the crowd. Brandi comes out and goes to commentary. And her commentary, from what everybody says, was horrid. One thing she was saying that how bored she was at the match. You can't, why are you burying the people that you book? But that's not the crux of the conversation. In the match, Riho and Chris had a really good match until the Nightmare Collective decided to interfere, namely Kong and Melanie Cruz, a.k.a. Mel, asked if it was a DQ.
Was it?
No! They kept interfering, and it went to a final win. Riho apparently rolled Chris Statlander up or something. I didn't watch the shit. And wasn't happy about it. And then they tried to get Chris to join, and she wouldn't. And just a big mess. Then, if you don't know the MJF Cody story, which has been so convoluted with the Butcher, the Blade, and the Bunny, and QT Marshall, and everybody else, well, MJF said last week,
Too many factions.
Thank you. Thank you for saying it. MJF said you either got to do one of all three or do all three. You got to take 10 lashes on air. You got to fight Wardlow in a cage. Or you can't touch me until we fight a revolution.
This is the most overbooked shit I've ever fucking seen in my life.
I ain't got nowhere yet. So Cody and Dustin fought the Lucha Brothers. After their match, MJF comes out next. If they got on-site beef, why are their segments next to each other? You think Cody just left the building after his match? The MJF came out the tunnel. But okay, MJF comes out. You know who comes out to confront him? Nightmare family member Diamond Dallas Page. Diamond Dallas Page proceeds to cut a 3-minute promo on himself. It's me as DDP, DDP Yoga, DDPY, before he confronts MJF for kicking his quote-unquote godson in the balls. Then, after he puts himself over for 3 minutes, I love you, Paige, no diss. Then he goes to MJF. MJF, for his credit, did the greatest thing I've seen in AEW television. He live-tweeted in the ring saying, who the fuck is this dude, or some shit like that. Excellent.
So he said, the tweet was, will this old fart ever shut up?
And that was the sentiments of many wrestlers and wrestling fans. Finally, you would think it's time for those two to get heated up, right? The Butcher and the Blade come out. What do they get? Diamond cutters. Why are they signed? What are they there for? Right?
I'm not done.
Oh, then MJF finally kicks him in the balls, and they get away. So next week, long story short, all of this was built. For next week, they're having a Bash at the Beach in Miami show. And next week, there will be a 6-man tag. Oh, by the way, QT Marshall and Dustin Rhodes came out to help DDP. Where was Cody? Sorry. Next week, the Butcher, the Blade.
From MJF rants.
I guess so. The guy who owns the company and was kicked in the books the company was kicked in the balls. Is hiding from this dude. The Butcher, the Blade, and MJF next week will face QT Marshall, Dustin Rhodes, and Diamond Dallas Page in a 6-man tag. Now, the same fans who are saying this makes sense talked about the Big Show coming back on Monday. Big Show, how old is the Big Show, Rance? Big Show's 49 years old. How old, might you ask, is Diamond Dallas Page? Oh, he's just a paltry 63. Like, what are we doing? Like, what are we doing?
Wait, so we're done now? Hold on, we're done now? Like,
that's, I can give you now. More, but that's the main...
No. The fact that you can give me more is even worse, because, like, I have one, I just have one reply to this. And, like, and then I'll give you an idiom that I stole from my high school students.
Before you give me your idiom, I also want to just throw out this little bomb, the story they're telling now with Hangman Page being a drunk.
What?
So, yeah, that's a storyline, and that's just, no.
It's all yours. I could keep going again
because, like, I've got to reply to this message, like, immediately. So please keep going.
Okay. Let's talk about Yes, sir.
Yeah. I got a couple thoughts. Wow. You blew me away with the drunk storyline.
I'm not done. There's more.
I'm going to circle back to this because I'd never want to take the chance to pass up the opportunity. I never want to pass up the opportunity to slander some boomers. So it is just like, I love DDP. I love him, but it is just like a fucking boomer to take care of himself for 3 minutes before he gets to the young gun and helps give him the rub. Fuck boomers.
Okay. Yes. Fuck boomers. I've remembered my response to this and my idiom.
And remember my question, Rob.
My response to this is why the boys can't have the book. That's my response to this. But my idiom that I have stolen from high school teenagers to really just describe AEW and everything that's wrong here. You doing the most. Like, you real fucking extra, and you doing the most. Yeah. And I just need you to do a lot less. Like, this is the most overbooked, convoluted. Like, we talked about New Japan has factions. New Japan has four factions, primarily, that feud with each other, and everyone is a member of one of those four factions, is loosely affiliated with the non-existent fifth one, or is a young lion. That's it. This fucking company has a million stables. They've got...
All heels.
They've got all of these stipulations and crazy matches and
Here's what I like, Kyle. Kenny Omega right now is currently feuding with Pac, who keeps attacking Michael Nakazawa, and he ain't done shit, but that's his best friend. He's feuding with clearly the Dark Order, because they beat him up a few weeks ago. He's feuding kind of unilaterally with Hangman Page, because they keep getting tagged up, and Page keeps saying he don't want to be a part of the Elite no more. Cody's feuding with the Butcher, the Blade, the Bunny, MJF, Wardlow, all 17 members of the Dark Order. Like, what are we doing, dog? What are we doing? And apparently Dustin Rhodes is now a member of the Elite, even though Dustin wasn't even in the company when they started it. Like, what are we doing?
Convoluted. Why is this so complicated?
Can I answer that question? I have a legitimate answer for that. But first, Rob, I'm gonna ask you a question first.
Yeah.
Do you have something else?
No, it was just a fucking groan about the alcohol storyline. Like, I know these guys are old enough to remember when they went through this shit with Hawk and Animal. Like, leave that shit alone. Don't bring that into wrestling.
I think it's Scott Hall fake.
Oh God, yeah.
Okay, here's the reason. Mike Johnson, who I don't really fuck with, but again, is one of the more reputable talking heads in wrestling, released a report that Tony Khan, who is Vince McMahon, everything goes through him. He's booking the shit, and here's the best part, and I'm going to give you time for a laugh track. You ready? I'm going to sit back, give you 15 seconds to get your laughs out. He has been studying fervently the history of Nitro to prepare him for booking AEW. I'm going on mute.
God. That explains so much of what you just told us.
Decadent and like, oh.
So, oh. And for those of you thinking that we hate on AEW, right now we are, yes. But if NXT did something as asinine as AEW did last night, they'd be getting destroyed too.
So, Kyle, I'm gonna let you handle this. But I find it ironic that he is studying the WCW library. Which I'm sure he can only do with a subscription to the WWE Network.
Well, I mean, Rob, you knew they had subscriptions to the network because they can't keep the same out their mouth.
100%.
And Cody got a lifetime subscription because, you know, they rock and forth with the Dusty name.
The only thing Cody's got a lifetime subscription for is gargling Hunter's balls, because like as much as he talk all that shit about Hunter, like I don't ever hear Hunter talking about you, son. So like, sounds to me like Big Brother's not too interested.
Who is it Ricky that says that you know what, fuck it, I probably said this shit because this shit is really fucked up, but That Cody's just mad because he's not Dustin's favorite son. And we're not talking about Dustin.
It's definitely not Dustin either.
Nope. I think it's fucking hilarious and shows how incredibly short-sighted that dumbass is. He gonna run that wrestling company the same way his father runs that dumpster fire of a football organization. Both of them.
Absolutely.
We see what kind of fruit that tree bears.
Rob, hold on real quick. Rob, tell the people about how the Fulham crowd feels about Shad Khan.
They hate him. He is absolutely loathed.
That's the owner.
Yeah, because he sucks. But like, what kind of a dumbass? Like, for real, for real. What kind of a dumbass studies Nitro?
So
for your like, this is how I build a successful.
The problem isn't that he's studying Nitro, in my opinion. It's that he's watching the later episodes of Nitro. Apparently, from what you just described, this shit show was. I mean, he's not ripping off the successful period with NWO. This is
a reset of Nitro.
Yeah, we're going to have a Millionaire's Club soon. Like, it's... Oh, fuck.
Now, you know what? Oh, I mean, the new blood and... Every champion's getting stripped and we're going to give the chip.
Okay. Reset.
Let me say this.
Jarrett's going to be the leader of the NWO because... Oh, that's the one thing AEW needs that they don't have yet to be the real, like, official new knockoff wrestling brand. Jeff Jarrett hasn't swindled them out of money yet. Like,
that's real.
I'm sorry, but until Jeff Jarrett has finessed you, I do not consider you legitimate wrestling yet. Wait until I get a slap nuts guitar session, you have not yet achieved true status. He needs to steal money from you and trick you into thinking he's marketable first.
Well, let me say this. They did have a kind of a memorial for Memphis wrestling last night. Who's the pioneer of the Memphis wrestling scene?
Jerry loved to push that JEFFJARRERC.
So I mean, even when he's not finessing, he's finessing.
Finesser in the game.
Let me do this to be positive. I'm gonna say three positive things of AEW in general. Darby Allin is becoming a star overnight. When one thing I hate JR in his commentary, but he said one thing that resonated with me so heavy. He said Darby Allin is this generation's Jeff Hardy. That's so true. It fits so perfect with his hopefully his relationship with his fans. Well, the way he take bumps, he let's hope he don't.
I said hopefully without the
match. Yeah. The tag team wrestling still is fire. Ain't no reasoning behind it, but their matches are still fire. And even though I'm over the inner circle, but Jericho and Moxley together on the mic is fire. They're killing it. So I got it. Look, I don't want to see them wrestle, but their promos, they hit. So look, I want to give three positives so you don't just sit here and say we're WWE shills and we hate AEW all the time.
I'm a WWE shill and I hate AEW all the time.
The thoughts of Rob Daniels are actually probably echoed by the Outsider's Edge. We got to go. I want to get you guys out of here in two quick hits that you're probably going to be mad we don't talk deeper in it. Kyle never got a chance to talk Lars Sullivan. I'm sorry, Mitch Bennett.
That's got to be,
You want to give time for that? Because we can talk about next week.
Yeah, I want to give time for it because I've got so many thoughts.
And I've been looking forward to that.
Do you want to have a conversation about it? Because we can do it now before we get off.
No, I've been looking forward to Kyle talking about it.
So, okay, next week, guys, be prepared. We're going to talk the Mitch Bennett situation, Lars Sullivan. And recently there has been some possible dirt issues coming up with WWE NXT diva, not Jasmine, what's her fucking, Aaliyah?
Aaliyah.
Her name is teeny tiny girl who's not good in the ring and apparently a racist bitch.
Well,
that's her name.
Allegedly. And we'll have more for you next week.
Look us with teasers for our future show.
2020, baby. Also, shout out to the Usos coming back. Stay healthy, Us. Shout out to John Morrison coming back. And that he's going to be on this EP. That entrance is going to be fire. Before we get out of here, I don't know how you feel about it, but I know how you feel about the guy. Before we get out of here, both your thoughts on Brock Lesnar being number one in the Rumble. Mind you, the title's not on the line, so if he wins, which he won't, he's going for somebody else's.
I'll jump at this one first. I think I shared this in our group. What I'm hoping for, I'm all for it. I think it's great. It's not something that I've seen before, but I'm hoping that I get my favorite Rumble spot out of this, which is one guy dominating a few people in a row, standing there waiting as the clock ticks down, and then somebody else comes out, he throws him over, and is just standing there waiting. I love that spot when we get it in the Rumble, and it doesn't happen very often, so I'm hoping for that.
Who do you want to be the guy, the final guy after that confronts him and makes it that big confrontation?
So,
it's always somebody.
It is. When I've been looking over this, I was leaning towards Drew McIntyre, just because of the way he's been presented recently.
Makes the most sense.
But who does Brock work best with? Much like Taker and much like Walter, it's usually the smaller guys.
Yes.
There's a guy on Raw that's not doing much right now that I would really like to see.
Does he like being tickled?
He does.
Oh my God!
Ricochet.
Brock will throw him all over the building.
But I don't think Ricochet is main event ready for WrestleMania, and that's what this is probably leading into. So I think it's probably going to be Drew.
Real quick, and it's all yours, Kyle. I'd love to see him and Keith Lee have a nice little what's that? And speaking of smaller guys, Kyle's favorite wrestler, what Aleister Black? Go ahead, sir.
What about lacks of charisma?
You know what? I can cut your mic off. No, I'm playing. I can't. I really can't. What do you think of Brock being in the Rumble, number one?
So it should come as no shock to either of you that I was not up to date on my Raw because, Monday is just,
it's a rough day.
It's a rough day. So, I'm okay with it just because the Rumble's my favorite match. So, I don't really care as much about, necessarily who they put in it. I don't care that the title's not on the line. As far as who I would have eliminate him. I like to troll the audience a little bit, so I would have Seth and AOP eliminate him to tease, ooh, like they were going to redo that whole thing, only like Seth primarily just has his lackeys doing the work for him because they're big-ass fucking muscle that could actually match Brock in size. But then not have Seth win the Rumble because it's, again, you know, swerve.
He can't win it again, yeah. Two things on that and we're out of here. Number one, the Monday Night Messiah is a fire nickname, dog. This fool is calling himself a Messiah. That's amazing.
Who is this?
Seth is calling himself the Monday Night Messiah.
Calling himself? Okay, I'm here for that.
Seth is going full-on Jim Jones / Negan.
Yes.
Like, that is it. That's who he is to me right now. Even with the jacket, he's basically wrestling Negan. So all he needs is his back. All he needs is Lucille. And secondly, the beauty of Brock being in the Rumble, and he's not winning. I'd bet my entire life savings, which is like $10, that he's not winning. But this is very clearly going to lead to his WrestleMania match. I am very curious to see how they play this. Because whoever eliminates him is going to be the guy that does it. Speaking of that, a lot of people think it's Punk. You want to say something about Punk? Basically telling Miz to eat a dick? Or do we care?
I don't care, and here's why I don't care. That is on brand for both of them. It's exactly as petulant as I would expect anything involving both of them to be. And that's really all there is to it. Like, and I'm not saying, you know, Miz is a bad person, but like, Miz is a reality TV person who's made his entire life prior to wrestling reality TV and is now getting wrestling to pay him to go back to doing reality TV. So like, doing petulant, childish shit in an argument publicly on Twitter is very on brand.
Well, Miz didn't do anything. Miz did a video after backstage was over saying, well, how did I do? Was this the best episode ever? And everybody was like, nah, not really. He was like, but it's the best episode I was on. They were like, it's cool. He was like, well, my bad. I'm sorry I didn't change the culture. That was all he said. And Punk went off. So, I mean, one could see it as petulant. Punk is the dick that he told Miz to eat. Mr. Daniels, final thoughts.
Fuck Punk. It's great that he's back, sure. He's bringing eyes to the product, but he is who he is. He exposed himself as an ass, you know, when he left, and it's not a shock. It's in keeping with his character.
Well, so we're going to end the show by quoting a Punk quote. Rob, tell them where they can find you, sir.
You can find me on Twitter.
Keep off my lawn.
At Outsider Curvin.
Oh, nice. Speaking of that, you guys listening will hear Carl sometime this month because Carl is coming to stay with me for the Rumble. So yes. I will make him record something that we
I knew there had to be a catch because I was just like, what, are you going to kidnap him and tie him to the room while we record the show? Because otherwise, I don't know how we're going to get him.
Two things. He's staying at my house, and his wife is coming with him. So between me and his wife, he will be stuck. That's number one. Oh, so that's it, yeah.
Whatever kind of ropes. Shit y'all are trying to get down on, like, I support you.
Well, I mean, it can't, you know, you went and had to go get you somebody
oh,
else. So.
Could rock your world with some things that said to me. But you can find me on Twitter, at Dr. S'mores.
You went and found you a Michael Nakazawa and shit, you know. Anyway, the show is at Outsiders Edge SS. We're at Chair Shot Radio Network at Chair Shot Radio. Where are you?
Always use your head.
ProWrestlingTees.com/TheChairShot. # journalism. Go get the shirt, among other good things. Go read Clive's column. It's amazing.
Real good.
Me and Clive did a column together also on Chair Shot. Top 10 best moments in Full Sail history, NXT. Check it out. It's awesome. We love you guys. 2020, we here. Yo, we busy this month. Wrestle Kingdom. Night 1, night 2, night 3, 4, 5, all them damn nights. Blackpool 2. Tesla's match at Hard to Kill. We don't give a fuck about the rest of the show. Racist NWA is doing a show that Marty Scurll is main eventing, so I'm interested in that. Worlds Colliding, Royal Rumble, big shit. We're busy this month. Stay with us. We're going to give you all that good content, all that good shit. And as one Phil Brooks would like to say.
Well, y'all, you got to remember that we here at the Outsider's Edge are just some, you know, increasingly older people doing what we love to do. And so, you know, sometimes we're not perfect. Sometimes we're going to have technical difficulties. Sometimes our sound's going to fuck up. Sometimes we're going to have weird and controversial opinions. But, like, no matter what, y'all, we're just out here chasing our dreams. And, like, you got to respect that.
Please?
Oh, don't say please, because, like, if they don't, you damn sure know we don't give up. Fuck.
Say it, Rob.
We don't give up.
You're supposed to say fuck them, but sure, we'll take it too.
Yo, y'all, thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.